Barton 117,
Dr. Halsey's voice blared over the loudspeaker.
Report to the bridge immediately.
John snapped to attention and keyed the intercom. Yes, ma'am. He turned to Sam. Get everyone ready, in case we're needed. On the double.
Affirmative, Sam said. You heard the petty officer. Dog those cards. Get into uniform, soldier.
John double-timed it to the elevator and punched the code for the bridge. Gravity faded out, and then back again, as the elevator passed between rotating sections of the ship. The doors parted, and he stepped onto the bridge. Every wall had a screen. Some showed stars and the distant red smear of a nebula. Other screens displayed the fusion reactor status and spectrums of microwave broadcasts in the system. A brass railing ringed the center of the bridge, and within sat four junior lieutenants at their stations: navigation, weapons, communications, and ship operations. John halted and saluted Captain Wallace, then nodded to Dr. Halsey. Captain Wallace stood with his right arm crooked behind his back. His left arm was missing from the elbow down. John remained saluting until the captain returned the gesture.
"Over here, please," Dr. Halsey said. "I want you to see this."
John walked across the rubberized deck and gave his full attention to the screen Dr. Halsey and Captain Wallace were scrutinizing. It displayed deconvoluted radar signals. It looked like tangled yarn to John.
"There,"
Dr. Halsey pointed to a blip on the screen.
"It's there again."
Captain Wallace stroked his dark beard, thinking, then said,
"That puts our ghost at 80 million kilometers. Even if it were a ship, it would take a full hour to get within weapons range. And besides," he waved at the screen, "it's gone again."
"May I suggest that we go to battle stations, Captain?"
Dr. Halsey told him.
"I don't see the point," he said condescendingly.
The captain was clearly less than pleased about having a civilian on his bridge.
"We haven't let this be widely known," she said, "but when the aliens were first detected at Harvest, they appeared at extreme range, and then they were suddenly much closer."
"An intra-system jump?" John asked. Dr. Halsey smiled at him.
"Correctly surmised, Spartan."
"That's not possible," Captain Wallace remarked. "Slipstream space can't be navigated that accurately."
"You mean we cannot navigate with that kind of accuracy," she said.
The captain clenched and unclenched his jaw. He clicked the intercom.
"General quarters, all hands to battle stations. Seal bulkheads. I repeat, all hands, battle stations. This is not a drill. Reactors to 90%. Come about to course 125.
The bridge lights darkened to a red hue. The deck rumbled beneath John's boots, and the entire ship tilted as it changed heading. Pressure doors slammed shut and sealed John on the bridge. The Commonwealth stabilized on her new heading, and Dr. Halsey crossed her arms. She leaned over and whispered to John,
"We'll be using the Commonwealth's dropship to go to the testing facility on Chi Seti IV. We have to get to Project Mjolnir."
She turned back and watched the radar screen.
"Before they do. So get the others ready."
"Yes, ma'am." John keyed the intercom. "Sam, muster the squad in Bay Alpha. I want that Pelican loaded and ready for drop in 15 minutes.
"We'll have it done in 10, Sam replied. "Faster if those long-sword interceptor pilots get out of our way."
John would have given anything to be below decks with the others. He felt as if he were being left behind. The radar screen flashed with blobs of eerie green light, almost as if the space around the Commonwealth were boiling. The collision alarm sounded.
"Brace for impact,"
Captain Wallace said. He laced his arm around the brass railing. John grabbed an emergency handhold on the wall. Something appeared 3,000 kilometers off the Commonwealth's prow. It was a sleek oval with a single seam running along its lateral edge from stem to stern. Tiny lights winked on and off along its hull. A faint purple-tinged glow emitted from the tail. The ship was only a third the size of the Commonwealth.
"A Covenant ship," Dr. Halsey said, and she involuntarily backed away from the viewscreens.
Captain Wallace scowled.
"Comm officer, send a signal to Chi Seti. See if they can send us some reinforcements."
"Aye, sir."
Blue flashes flickered along the hull of the alien ship, so bright that even filtered through the external camera, they still made John's eyes water. The outer hull of the Commonwealth sizzled and popped, three screens filled with static.
"Pulse lasers!"
the lieutenant of the op station screamed.
"Communication dish destroyed! Armor in sections 3 and 4 at 25%! Hull breach in section 3! Sealing now!"
The lieutenant swiveled in his seat. Sweat beaded on his forehead.
"Ship AI core, memory overloaded," he said.
With the AI offline, the ship could still fire weapons and navigate through slipstream space, but John knew it would take more time to make jump calculations.
"Come to heading 030, declination 180, Captain Wallace ordered. "Arm Archer missile pods A through F, and give me a firing solution."
"Aye, aye," the navigation and weapons officer said. "A through F pods armed."
They furiously tapped away on their keypads. Seconds ticked by.
"Firing solution ready, sir."
"Fire!"
"Pods A through F firing."
The Commonwealth had 26 pods, each loaded with 30 Archer high-explosive missiles. On screen, pods A through F opened and launched. 180 plumes of rocket exhaust that traced a path from the Commonwealth to the alien ship. The enemy changed course, rotated so that the top of the ship faced the incoming missiles. It then moved straight up at an alarming speed. The Archer missiles altered their trajectory to track the ship, but half their number streaked past the target, clean misses. The others impacted. Fire covered the skin of the alien ship.
"Good work, Lieutenant,"
Captain Wallace said, and he clapped the young officer on the shoulder. Dr. Halsey frowned and stared at the screen.
"No,"
she whispered.
"Wait."
The fire flared, then dimmed. The skin of the alien ship rippled like heat wavering off a hot road in the summer. It fluttered with a metallic silver sheen, then brilliant white, and the fire faded, revealing the ship beneath. It was completely undamaged.
"Energy shields,"
Dr. Halsey muttered. She tapped her lower lip, thinking.
"Even ships this small have energy shielding."
"Lieutenant,"
the captain barked at the nav officer.
"Cut main engines and fire maneuvering thrusters. Rotate and track so that we're pointing at that thing."
"Aye, aye, sir."
The distant rumbling of the Commonwealth's main engines dimmed and stopped, and she turned about. Her inertia kept the ship speeding toward the testing facility, now flying backward.
"What are you doing, Captain?"
Dr. Halsey asked.
"Arm the Mac,"
Captain Wallace told the weapons officer.
"A heavy round."
John understood. Turning your back to an enemy only gave them an advantage. The Mac, magnetic accelerator cannon, was the Commonwealth's main weapon. It fired a super-dense ferric tungsten shell. The tremendous mass and velocity of the projectile obliterated most ships on impact. Unlike the Archer missiles, a Mac round was an unguided projectile. The firing solution had to be perfect in order to hit the target. Not an easy thing to do when both ships were moving rapidly.
"Mac capacitors charging,"
the weapons officer announced. The Covenant ship turned its side toward the Commonwealth.
"Yes," the captain murmured. "Give me a bigger target."
Pinpoints of blue light glowed and then flared along the alien hull. The tactical view screens on the nose of the Commonwealth went dead. John heard sizzling overhead, then the muffled thumps of explosive decompressions.
"More pulse laser hits," the ops officer reported. "Armor in section 3 through 7 down to 4 centimeters. Navigation dish destroyed. Hull breaches on decks 2, 5, and 9. We have a leak in the port fuel tanks."
The lieutenant's hand shakily danced over the controls.
"Pumping fuel to starboard reverse tanks. Sealing sections."
John shifted on his feet. He had to move. Act, standing here, unable to get his squad, not doing anything, was counter to every fiber of his being.
"Mac at 100%,
the weapons officer shouted.
"Ready to fire!"
"Fire!"
Captain Wallace ordered. The lights on the bridge dimmed, and the Commonwealth shuddered. The Mac bolt launched through space, a red-hot metal slug moving at 30,000 meters per second. The Covenant ship's engines flared to life, and the ship veered away. Too late. The heavy round closed and slammed into the target's prow. The Covenant ship reeled backward through space. Its energy shield shimmered and glowed lightning bright, then flickered, dimmed, and went out. The bridge crew let out a victory cheer. Except Dr. Halsey. John watched the view screen as she adjusted the camera controls and zoomed in on the Covenant ship. The vessel's erratic spinning slowed and it came to a stop. The ship's nose was crumpled and atmosphere vented into vacuum. Tiny fires flickered inside. The ship slowly came about and started back toward them, gaining speed.
"It should have been destroyed," she whispered.
Tiny red blobs appeared on the hull of the Covenant ship. They glowed and intensified and drifted together, collecting along the lateral line of the craft. Captain Wallace said,
"Make ready another heavy round."
"Aye, aye, sir," the weapons officer said. "Charge at 30%. Firing solution online, sir."
"No,"
Dr. Halsey said.
"Evasive maneuvers, Captain. Now."
"I won't have my command second-guessed, ma'am."
The captain turned to face her.
"And with respect, Doctor, second-guessed by someone with no combat experience."
He stiffened and placed his hand behind his back.
"I cannot have you removed from the bridge because the bulkheads are sealed. But another outburst like that, Doctor, and I will have you gagged."
John shot a quick glance to Dr. Halsey. Her face flushed. He couldn't tell from shame or rage.
"Mac at 50% charge."
The red light continued to collect along the lateral line of the Covenant ship until it was a solid band. It brightened.
80% charge."
"They're turning, sir,"
the nav officer announced.
"She's coming to starboard." 95% charge, 100,
the weapons officer announced.
"Send them to Hades, Lieutenant. Fire!"
The lights dimmed again. The Commonwealth shuddered, and a bolt of thunder and fire tore through the blackness. The Covenant ship stood its ground. The blood-red light that had pooled on its lateral line burst forth, streaked toward the Commonwealth, passing the Macround a mere kilometer away. The red light glowed and pulsed, almost as if it were liquid. Its edges roiled and fluttered. It elongated into a teardrop of ruby light 5 meters long.
"Evasive maneuvers!"
Captain Wallace cried.
"Emergency thrusters to port!"
The Commonwealth slowly moved out of the trajectory path of the Covenant's energy weapon. The Macround struck the Covenant vessel amidships. Its shield shimmered and bubbled, then disappeared. The Macround punched through the craft and sent it spinning out of control. The inbound ball of light moved, too. It started tracking the Commonwealth.
"Engines, full power astern!"
the captain ordered. The Commonwealth rumbled and slowed. The light should have sped past them. Instead, it sharply arced and struck her port amidships. The air filled with a popping and sizzling. The Commonwealth listed to starboard, then rolled completely over and continued to tumble.
"Stabilize!"
the captain cried.
"Starboard thrusters!"
"Fire reported in sections 1 through 20,
the ops officer said, panic creeping into his voice.
"Decks 2 through 7 in section 1 have melted, sir. They're gone."
It grew noticeably hotter on the bridge. Sweat beaded on John's back and trickled down his spine. He had never felt so helpless. Were his teammates below decks alive or dead?
"All port armor destroyed. Decks 2 through 5 and sections 3, 4, and 5 are now out of contact, sir. It's burning through us."
Captain Wallace stood without saying a word. He stared at their one remaining view screen. Dr. Halsey stepped forward.
"Respectfully, Captain, I suggest that you alert the crew to get on respirator packs. Give them 30 seconds, then vent the atmosphere on all decks except the bridge."
The comm officer looked to the captain.
"Do it," the captain said. "Sound the alert."
"Deck 13 destroyed," the ops officer announced. "Fire is getting close to the reactor. Hull structure starting to buckle."
"Vent atmosphere now,"
Captain Wallace ordered.
"Aye, aye,"
the ops officer replied. There was the sound of thumping through the hull, then nothing.
"Fire is dying out,"
the ops officer said.
"Hull temperature cooling, stabilizing."
"What the hell did they hit us with?"
Captain Wallace demanded.
"Plasma," Dr. Halsey replied. "But not any plasma we know. They can actually guide its trajectory through space without any detectable mechanism. Amazing."
"Captain,"
the navigator said,
"alien ship is pursuing."
The Covenant vessel, a red-rimmed hole punched through its center, turned and started toward the Commonwealth.
How?
Captain Wallace said unbelievingly. He quickly regained his wits.
Ready another Mac heavy round!
The weapons officer slowly said, Mac system destroyed, Captain.
We're sitting ducks, then,
the captain murmured. Dr. Halsey leaned against the brass railing.
Not quite. The Commonwealth carries 3 nuclear missiles, correct, Captain?
A detonation this close would destroy us as well.
She frowned and cupped her hand to her chin, thinking.
Excuse me, sir, John said. The aliens' tactics thus far have been unnecessarily vicious, like those of an animal. They didn't have to take that second Mac round while they fired at us. But they wanted to position themselves to fire. In my opinion, sir, they would stop and engage anything that challenged them.
The captain looked at Dr. Halsey. She shrugged and then nodded.
The longsword interceptors?
Captain Wallace turned his back to them and covered his face with his one hand. He sighed, nodded, and clicked on the intercom.
Longsword Squadron Delta, this is the captain. Get your ships into the black, boys, and engage the enemy ship. I need you to buy us some time.
Roger that, sir. We're ready to launch. On our way.
Turn us around, the captain told the nav officer. Give me best speed on a vector toward Chi Seti 4 orbit.
Coolant leaks in the reactor, sir,
the ops officer said.
We can push the engines to 30%, no more.
Give me 50%,
he said. He turned to the weapons officer.
Arm one of our Shiva warheads. Set proximity fuse to 100 meters.
Yes, sir.
The Commonwealth spun about. John felt the change in his stomach, and he tightened his grip on the railing. The spinning slowed, stopped, then the ship accelerated.
Reactor redlining, the ops officer reported. Meltdown in 25 seconds.
Over the speakers, there was a crackle, a hiss of static, then...
Longsword interceptors engaging the enemy, sir.
On the remaining aft camera, there were flickers of light. The cold blue strobes of Covenant energy weapons, and the red-orange fireballs of the Longsword's missiles.
Launch the missile,
the captain said.
Meltdown in 10 seconds. Missile away!
A plume of exhaust divided the darkness of space.
5 seconds to meltdown, the ops officer said. 4, 3, 2...
Shunt drive plasma to space, the captain ordered. Cut power to all systems!
The Covenant ship was silhouetted for a split second by pure white. Then the view screen snapped off. The bridge lights went dead. John could see everything, though. The bridge officers, Dr. Halsey as she clutched onto the railing, and Captain Wallace as he stood and saluted the pilots he had just sent to die. The hull of the Commonwealth rumbled and pinged as the shock wave enveloped them. It grew louder. A subsonic roar that shook John to his bones. The noise seemed to go on forever in the darkness. It faded. Then it was completely silent.
Power us back up, the captain said. Slowly. Give me 10% from the reactors if we can manage.
The bridge lights came on, dimly, but they worked.
Report,
the captain ordered.
All sensors offline, the op officer said. Resetting backup computer. Hang on. Scanning now. Lots of debris. It's hot back there. All longsword interceptors vaporized.
He looked up, the color drained from his face.
Covenant ship intact, sir.
No,
the captain said and made a fist.
It's moving off, though, the op officer said with a visible sigh of relief. Very slowly.
What does it take to destroy one of those things? The captain whispered.
We don't know if our weapons can destroy them, Dr. Halsey said. But at least we know we can slow them down.
The captain stood straighter.
Best speed to the Damascus testing facility. We will execute a flyby orbit, then proceed to a point 20 million kilometers distant to make repairs.
Captain, Dr. Halsey said, a flyby?
I have orders to get you to the facility and retrieve whatever Section 3 is stowed there, ma'am. As we fly by, a dropship will take you and your...
He glanced at John.
Crew, planetside. If the Covenant ship returns, We will be the bait to lure them away.
I understand, Captain.
We'll rendezvous in orbit no later than 1900 hours.
Dr. Halsey turned to John.
We need to hurry. We don't have much time, and there is a great deal I need to show the Spartans.
Yes, ma'am, John said. He took a long look at the bridge and hoped he never had to return. Chapter 13. 1845 hours, November 27, 2525, military calendar. UNSC Damascus Materials Testing Facility. Planet Chi Ceti 4. How far down was the testing facility? John and the other Spartans had been confined to a freight elevator for 15 minutes, and the entire time it had been rapidly descending into the depths of Chi Ceti 4. The last place John wanted to be was in another confined space. The doors finally slid open, and they emerged in what appeared to be a well-lit hangar. The far end had an obstacle course set up with walls, trenches, dummy targets, and barbed wire. Three technicians and at least a dozen AI figures were busy in the center of the room. John had seen AIs before, one at a time. Deja had once told the Spartans that there were technical reasons why AIs couldn't be in the same place at the same time. But here were many ghostly figures, a mermaid, a samurai warrior, and one made entirely of bright light with comets trailing in her wake. Dr. Halsey cleared her throat. The technicians turned. The AIs vanished. John had been so focused on the holograms that he hadn't noticed the 40 plexiglass mannequins set up in rows. On each was a suit of armor. The armor reminded John of the exoskeletons he had seen during training, but much less bulky, more compact. He stepped closer to one and saw that the suit actually had many layers. The outer layer reflected the overhead lights with a faint green-gold iridescence. It covered the groin, outer thighs, knees, shins, chest, shoulders, and forearms. There was a helmet and an integrated power pack, much smaller than standard marine battery sacks. Underneath were intermeshed layers of matte black metal.
"Project Mjolnir," Dr. Halsey said.
She snapped her fingers, and an exploded holographic schematic of the armor appeared next to her.
"The armor's shell is a multi-layer alloy of remarkable strength. We recently added a refractive coating to disperse incoming energy weapon attacks, to counter our new enemies."
She pointed inside the schematic.
"Each battlesuit also has a gel-filled layer to regulate temperature. This layer can reactively change in density. Against the skin of the operator, there is a moisture-absorbing cloth suit, and biomonitors that constantly adjust the suit's temperature and fit. There's also an onboard computer that interfaces with your standard-issue neural implant."
She gestured and the schematic collapsed, so that it only displayed the outer layers. As the image changed, John glimpsed vein-like microcapillaries, a dense sandwich of optical crystal, a circulating pump, even what looked like a miniature fusion cell in the backpack.
"Most importantly," Dr. Halsey said, "the armor's inner structure is composed of a new reactive metal liquid crystal. It is amorphous, yet fractally scales and amplifies force. In simplified terms, the armor doubles the wearer's strength and enhances the reaction speed of a normal human by a factor of 5.
She waved her hand through the hologram.
"There is one problem, however. This system is so reactive that our previous tests with unaugmented volunteers ended in..."
She searched for the right word.
"Failure."
She nodded to one of the technicians. A flat video appeared in the air. It showed a marine officer, a lieutenant, being fitted with a Mjolnir armor.
"Power is on," someone said from off-screen. "Move your right arm, please."
The soldier's arm blurred forward with incredible speed. The Marine's stoic expression collapsed into shock, surprise, and pain as his arm shattered. He convulsed, shuddered, and screamed. As he jerked in pain, John could hear the sounds of bones breaking. The man's own agony-induced spasms were killing him. Halsey waved the video away.
"Normal humans don't have the reaction time or strength required to drive this system," she explained. "You do. Your enhanced musculature and the metal and ceramic layers that have been bonded to your skeleton should be enough to allow you to harness the armor's power. There has been insufficient computer modeling, however. There will be some risk. You'll have to move very slowly and deliberately until you get a feel for the armor and how it works. It cannot be powered down, nor can the response be scaled back. Do you understand?"
"Yes, ma'am," the Spartans answered.
"Questions?"
John raised his hand.
"When do we get to try them, Doctor?"
"Right now," she said. "Volunteers?"
Every Spartan raised a hand. Dr. Halsey allowed herself a tiny smile. She surveyed them, and finally she turned to John.
"You've always been lucky, John," she said. "Let's go."
He stepped forward. The technicians fitted him as the others watched, and the pieces of the Majolnir system were assembled around his body. It was like a giant three-dimensional puzzle.
"Please breathe normally," Dr. Halsey told him, "but otherwise remain absolutely still."
John held himself as motionless as he could. The armor shifted and melded to the contours of his form. It was like a second skin, and much lighter than he had thought it would be. It heated, then cooled, then matched the temperature of his body. If he closed his eyes, he wouldn't have known he was encased. They set the helmet over his head. Health monitors, motion sensors, suit status indicators pulsed into life. A targeting reticle flickered on the heads-up display.
"Everyone move back," Halsey ordered.
The Spartans, from their expressions they were concerned for him but still intensely curious, cleared a ring with a radius of 3 meters around him.
"Listen carefully to me, John," Dr. Halsey said. "I just want you to think, and only think, about moving your arm up to chest level. Stay relaxed."
He willed his arm to move, and his hand and forearm sprang forward to chest level. The slightest motion translated his thought to motion at lightning speed. It had been so fast. If he hadn't been attached to his arm, he might have missed that it had happened at all. The Spartans gasped. Sam applauded. Even lightning-fast Kelly seemed impressed. Dr. Halsey slowly coached John through the basics of walking and gradually built up the speed and complexity of his motions. After 15 minutes, he could walk, run, and jump almost without thinking of the difference between suit motion and normal motion.
"Petty officer, run through the obstacle course," Dr. Halsey said. "We will proceed to fit the other Spartans. We don't have a great deal of time left."
John snapped a salute without thinking. His hand bounced off his helmet, and a dull ache throbbed in his hand. His wrist would be bruised. If his bones hadn't been reinforced, he knew they would have been pulverized.
"Carefully, petty officer. Very carefully, please."
"Yes, ma'am."
John focused his mind on motion. He leapt over a 3-meter-high wall. He punched at concrete targets, shattering them. He threw knives, sinking them up to their hafts into target dummies. He slid under barbed wire as bullets zinged over his head. He stood and let the rounds deflect off the armor. To his amazement, he actually dodged one or two of the rounds. Soon the other Spartans joined him on the course. Everyone ran awkwardly through the obstacles, though they had no coordination. John expressed his worries to Dr. Halsey.
"It will come to you soon enough. You've already received some subliminal training during your last cryosleep," Dr. Halsey told them. "Now all you need is time to get used to the suits."
More worrisome to John was the realization that they'd have to learn how to work together all over again. Their usual hand signals were too exaggerated now. A slight wave or tremble translated into full-force punches or uncontrolled vibrations. They would have to use the comm channels for the time being. As soon as he thought of this, his suit tagged and monitored the other Majolnir suits. Their standard-issue UNSC neural chip, implanted in every UNSC soldier at induction, identified friendly soldiers, and displayed them on their helmet HUDs. But this was different. All he had to do was concentrate on them, and a secure comm channel opened. It was extremely efficient. And, much to his relief, after drilling for 30 minutes, the Spartans had recovered all of their original group coordination, and more. On one level, John moved the suit, and in return, it moved him. On another level, however, communication with his squad was so easy and natural, he could move and direct them as if they were an extension of his body. Over the hangar speakers, the Spartans heard Dr. Halsey's voice. "Spartans, so far so good. If anyone is experiencing difficulties with the suit or its controls, please report in."
"I think I'm in love," Sam replied. "Oh, sorry, ma'am. I didn't think that was an open channel."
"Flawless amplification of speed and power," Kelly said. "It's like I've been training in this suit for years."
"Do we get to keep them?" John asked.
"You're the only ones who can use them, Petty Officer. Who else could we give them to? We..."
A technician handed her a headset.
"One moment, please. Report, Captain."
Captain Wallace's voice broke over the comm channels.
"We have contact with a Covenant ship, ma'am. Extreme range. Their slipspace engines must still be damaged. They're moving toward us via normal space."
"Your repair status?" she asked.
"Long-range communications inoperable. Slipstream generators offline. Max system destroyed. We have 2 fusion missiles and 20 Archer missile pods intact. Armor plating is at 20%.
There was a long hiss of static.
"If you need more time, I can try and draw them away."
"No, Captain," she replied,
and carefully scrutinized John and the other armored Spartans. "We're going to have to fight them. And this time, we have to win."
Chapter 14. 2037 hours, November 27, 2525, military calendar. In orbit over Chi Seti 4. John piloted the Pelican through the exit burn of their orbital path, then sent the ship toward the last known position of the Commonwealth. The frigate had moved 10 million kilometers in system from their rendezvous point. Dr. Halsey sat in the co-pilot seat, fidgeting with her spacesuit. In the aft compartment were the Spartans, the 3 technicians from the Damascus facility, and a dozen spare Mjolnir suits. Missing, however, were the AIs John had seen when they had first arrived. All Dr. Halsey had time to do was remove their memory processor cubes. It was a tremendous waste to leave such expensive equipment behind. Dr. Halsey examined the ship's short-range detection gear, then said,
"Captain Wallace may be trying to use Chi Seti's magnetic field to deflect the Covenant's plasma weapon. Try and catch up, Petty Officer."
"Yes, ma'am."
John pushed the engines to 100%.
"Covenant ship to port," she said. 3 million kilometers and closing on the Commonwealth."
John bumped up the magnification on screen and spotted the ship. The alien vessel's hull was bent at a 30-degree angle from the impact of the Mach heavy round, but it still moved at almost twice the speed of the Commonwealth.
"Doctor," John asked, "does the Mjolnir armor operate in vacuum?"
"Of course," she replied. "It was one of our first design considerations. The suit can recycle air for 90 minutes. It's shielded against radiation and EMP as well."
Then he spoke to Sam over his comlink.
"What kind of missiles is this bird carrying?"
"Wait one, sir,"
Sam replied. His voice returned a moment later.
"We have 2 rocket pods with 16 HE Anvil 2s each. I want you to assemble a team and go EVA. Remove those warheads from the wing pods."
"I'm on it," Sam said.
Halsey tried to push her glasses up higher on her nose. Instead, she bumped up against the faceplate of her suit's helmet.
"May I ask what you have in mind, squad leader?"
John left his comm channel open so the Spartans would hear his reply.
"Requesting permission to attack the Covenant ship, ma'am."
Her blue eyes widened.
"Most certainly not," she said. "If a warship like the Commonwealth couldn't destroy it, a Pelican is certainly no match for them."
"Not the Pelican, no," John agreed. "But I believe we Spartans are. If we get inside the enemy ship, we can destroy her." Dr. Halsey considered, tapping her lower lip.
"How will you get on board?"
We go EVA and use thruster packs to intercept the Covenant ship as it passes en route to the Commonwealth. She shook her head.
One slight error in your trajectory, and you could miss by kilometers, Dr. Halsey remarked.
A pause. I don't miss, ma'am, John said.
They have reflective shields.
True, John replied. But the ship is damaged. They may have had to lower or reduce shielding in order to conserve power. And if we have to, we can use one of our own warheads to punch a small hole in the barrier. He paused, then added, There's also a large hole in their hull. Their shield may not cover that space entirely. Dr. Halsey whispered,
It's a tremendous risk.
With respect, ma'am, it's a bigger risk to sit here and do nothing. After they finish with the Commonwealth, they'll come for us, and we'll have to fight them anyway. Better to strike first.
She stared off into space, lost in thought.
Finally, she sighed in resignation.
Very well. Go.
She transferred the pilot controls to her station.
And blow the hell out of them.
John climbed into the aft compartment. His Spartans stood at attention. He felt a rush of pride. They were ready to follow him as he leapt literally into the jaws of death.
I've got the warheads, Sam said.
It was hard to mistake Sam, even with his reflective blast shield covering his face. He was the largest Spartan, even more imposing encased in the armor.
Everyone's got one, Sam continued as he handed John a metal shell. Timers and detonators are already rigged. Stuck on a patch of adhesive polymer. They'll cling to your suit. Spartans, John said, grab thruster packs and make ready to go EVA. Everyone else? He motioned to the three technicians. Get into the forward cabin. If we fail, they'll be coming after the Pelican. Protect Dr. Halsey.
He moved aft. Kelly handed him a thruster pack and he slipped it on.
Covenant ship approaching, Halsey called out. I'm pumping out your atmosphere to avoid explosive decompression when I drop the back hatch.
We'll only get one shot at this, John said to the other Spartans. Plot an intercept trajectory and fire your thrusters at max burn. If the target changes course, you'll have to make a best guess correction on the fly. If you make it, we'll regroup outside the hole in their hull. If you miss, we'll pick you up after we're done. He hesitated, then added, And if we don't succeed, then power down your systems and wait for UNSC reinforcements to retrieve you. Live to fight another day. Don't waste your lives.
There was a moment of silence.
If anyone has a better plan, speak up now.
Sam patted John on the back.
This is a great plan. It'll be easier than Chief Mendez's playground. A bunch of little kids could pull it off.
Sure, John said.
Everyone ready?
Sir,
they said.
We're ready, sir.
John flipped the safety off and then punched in the code to open the Pelican's tail. The mechanism opened soundlessly in the vacuum. Outside was infinite blackness. He had a feeling of falling through space, but the vertigo quickly passed. He positioned himself on the edge of the ramp, both hands gripping a safety handle overhead. The Covenant ship was a tiny dot in the center of his helmet's viewscreen. He plotted a course and fired the thruster pack on maximum burn. Acceleration slammed him into the thruster harness. He knew the others would launch right after him, but he couldn't turn to see them. It occurred to him then that the Covenant ship might identify the Spartans as incoming missiles, and their point defense lasers were too damn accurate. John clicked on the comm channel.
Doctor, we could use a few decoys if Captain Wallace can spare them.
Understood, she said.
The Covenant vessel grew rapidly in his display. A burst from its engines, and it turned slightly. Traveling at 100 million kilometers an hour, even a minor course correction meant that he could miss by tens of thousands of kilometers. John carefully corrected his vector. The pulse laser on the side of the Covenant ship glowed, built up energy, until they were dazzling neon blue, then discharged, but not at him. John saw explosions in his peripheral vision. The Commonwealth had fired a salvo of her Archer missiles. Around him in the dark were puffballs of red-orange detonations, utterly silent. John's velocity now almost matched that of the ship. He eased toward the hull. 20 meters. 10. 5.
and then the Covenant ship started to pull away from him. It was traveling too fast. He tapped his altitude thrusters and pointed himself perpendicular to the hull. The Covenant hull accelerated under him, but he was dropping closer. He stretched out his arms. The hull raced past his fingertips a meter away. John's fingers brushed against something. It felt semi-liquid. He could see his hands skimming a near-invisible, glassy, shimmering surface. The energy shield. Damn. Their shields were still up. He glanced to either side. The huge hole in their hull was nowhere in sight. He slid over the hull, unable to grab hold of it. No. He refused to accept that he had made it this far, only to fail now. A pulse laser flashed 100 meters away. His faceplate barely adjusted in time. The flash nearly blinded him. John blinked and then saw a silvery film rush back around the bulbous base of the laser turret. The shield dropped to let the laser fire? The laser started to build up charge again. He would have to act quickly. His timing had to be perfect. If he hit that turret before it fired, he'd bounce off. If he hit the turret as it fired, there wouldn't be much left of him. The turret glowed, intensely bright. John set his thrust harness on a maximum burn toward the laser, noting the rapidly dwindling fuel charge. He closed his eyes, saw the blinding flash through his lids, felt the heat on his face, then opened his eyes, just in time to crash and bounce into the hull. The hull plates were smooth, but had grooves and odd organic crenellations. Perfect finger holds. The difference between his momentum and the ship's nearly pulled his arms out of their sockets. He gritted his teeth and tightened his grip. He had made it. John pulled himself along the hull toward the hole the Commonwealth's Macround had punched in the ship. Only two other Spartans waited for him there.
"What took you so long?"
Sam's voice crackled over the comm channel. The other Spartan lifted her helmet's reflective blast shield. He saw Kelly's face.
"I think we're it," Kelly said. "I'm not getting any other responses over the comm channels."
That meant either the Covenant ship shielded their transmissions, or there were no Spartans left to communicate with. John pushed that last thought aside. The hole was 10 meters across. Jagged metal teeth pointed inward. John looked over the edge and saw that the Mac heavy round had indeed passed all the way through. He saw tiers of exposed decks, severed conduits, and sheared metal beams. And through the other side, black space and stars. They climbed down. John immediately fell down on the first deck.
"Gravity," he said.
"And with nothing spinning on this ship."
"Artificial gravity?" Kelly asked. "Dr. Halsey would love to see this."
They continued inward, scaling the metal walls, past alternating layers of gravity and freefall, until they were approximately in the middle of the ship. John paused and saw the stars wheel outside either end of the hole. The Covenant ship must be turning. They were engaging the Commonwealth.
"We'd better hurry."
He stepped onto an exposed deck, and the gravity settled his stomach, giving him an up-and-down orientation.
"Weapons check," John told them.
They examined their assault rifles. The guns had made the journey intact. John slipped in a clip of armor-piercing rounds, noting with pleasure that the suit immediately aligned the sight profile of the gun with his targeting system. He slung the weapon and checked the HE warhead attached to his hip. The timer and detonator looked undamaged. John faced a sealed set of sliding pressure doors. It was smooth and soft to his touch. It could have been made of metal or plastic, could have been alive for all he knew. He and Sam grabbed either side and pulled, strained, and then the mechanism gave and the doors released. There was a hiss of atmosphere, a dark hallway beyond. They entered in formation, covering each other's blind spots. The ceiling was 3 meters high. It made John feel small.
"You think they need all this space because they're so large?" Kelly asked.
"We'll know soon," he told her. They crouched, weapons at the ready, and moved slowly down the corridor, John and Kelly in front. They rounded a corner and stopped at another set of pressure doors.
John grabbed the seam. "Hang on," Kelly said. She knelt next to a pad with 9 buttons. Each button was inscribed with runic alien script. "These characters are strange, but one of them has to open this." She touched one, and it lit. Then she keyed another. Gas hissed into the corridor. "At least the pressure is equalized," she said. John double-checked sensors. Nothing, though the alien metal inside the ship could be blocking the scans.
"Try another," Sam said.
She did, and the doors slid apart. The room was inhabited. An alien creature stood 1.5 meters tall, a biped. Its knobby, scaled skin was a sickly, mottled yellow. Purple and yellow fins ran along the crest of its skull and its forearms. Glittering, bulbous eyes protruded from skull-like hollows in the alien's elongated head. The Master Chief had read the UNSC's first contact scenarios. They called for cautious attempts at communication. He couldn't imagine communicating with something like this thing. It reminded him of the carrion birds on Reach, vicious and unclean. The creature stood there, frozen for a moment, staring at the human interlopers. Then it screeched and reached for something on its belt, its movements darting and bird-like. The Spartans shouldered their weapons and fired a trio of bursts with pinpoint accuracy. Armor-piercing rounds tore into the creature, shredding its chest and head. It crumpled into a heap without a sound, dead before it hit the deck. Thick blood oozed from the corpse.
"That was easy," Sam remarked.
He nudged the creature with his boot.
"They sure aren't as tough as their ships."
"Let's hope it stays that way," John replied.
"I'm getting a radiation reading this way," Kelly said. She gestured deeper into the vessel.
They continued down the corridor and took a side branch. Kelly dropped a nav marker, and its double blue triangle pulsed once on their heads-up displays. They stopped at another set of pressure doors. Sam and John took up flanking positions to cover her. Kelly punched the same buttons she had punched before, and the doors slid apart. Another of the creatures was there. It stood in a circular room with crystalline control panels and a large window. This time, however, the vulture-headed creature didn't scream or look particularly surprised. This one looked angry. The creature held a claw-like device in his hand, leveled at John. John and Kelly fired. Bullets filled the air and pinged off a silver shimmering barrier in front of the creature. A bolt of blue heat blasted from the claw. The blast was similar to the plasma that had hit the Commonwealth and boiled 1/3 of it away. The bolt sizzled over their heads. Sam dove forward and knocked John out of the blast's path. The energy burst caught Sam in the side. The reflective coating of his Mjolnir armor flared. He fell, clutching his side, but still managed to fire his weapon. John and Kelly rolled on their backs and sprayed gunfire at the creature. Bullets peppered the alien. Each one bounced and ricocheted off the energy shield. John glanced at his ammo counter. Half gone.
"Keep firing," he ordered.
The alien kept up a stream of answering fire. Energy blasts hammered into Sam, who fell to the deck, his weapon empty. John charged forward and slammed his foot into the alien's shield and knocked it out of line. He jammed the barrel of his rifle into the alien's screeching mouth and squeezed the trigger. The armor-piercing rounds punctured the alien and splattered the back wall with blood and bits of bone. John rose and helped Sam up.
"I'm okay,"
Sam said, holding his side and grimacing.
"Just a little singed."
The reflective coating on his armor was blackened.
"You sure?"
Sam waved him away. John paused over the remaining bits of the alien. He spotted a glint of metal, an arm guard, and he picked it up. He tapped 1 of 3 buttons on the device, but nothing happened. He strapped it onto his forearm. Dr. Halsey might find it useful. They entered the room. The large window was 1/2 meter thick. It overlooked a large chamber that descended 3 decks. A cylinder ran the length of the chamber, and red light pulsed along its length,
like a liquid sloshing back and forth. Under the window, on their side, rested a smooth, angled surface. Perhaps a control panel? On its surface were tiny symbols, glowing green dots, bars, and squares.
"That's got to be the source of the radiation," Kelly said, and pointed to the chamber beyond. "Their reactor, or maybe a weapon system."
Another alien marched near the cylinder. It spotted John. A silver shimmer appeared around it. It screeched and wobbled in alarm, then scrambled for cover.
"Trouble,"
John said.
"I've got an idea." Sam limped forward. "Hand me those warheads."
John did as he asked. So did Kelly.
"We shoot out that window, set the timers on the warheads, and toss them down there. That should start the party."
"Let's do it before they call in reinforcements," John said.
They turned and fired at the crystal. It crackled, splintered, then shattered.
"Toss those warheads," Sam said. "Let's get out of here."
John set the timers.
3 minutes, he said. "That'll give us just enough time to get topside and get away."
He turned to Sam.
"You'll have to stay and hold them off. That's an order."
"What are you talking about?" Kelly said.
"Sam knows."
Sam nodded.
"I think I can hold them off that long."
He looked at John and then Kelly. He turned and showed them the burn in the side of his suit. There was a hole the size of his fist, and beneath that, the skin was blackened and cracked. He smiled, but his teeth were gritted in pain.
"That's nothing," Kelly said. "We'll get you patched up in no time. Once we get back..."
Her mouth slowly dropped open.
"Exactly,"
Sam whispered.
"Getting back is going to be a problem for me."
"The hole." John reached out to touch it. "We don't have any way to seal it." Kelly shook her head.
"If I step off this boat, I'm dead from the decompression," Sam said, and shrugged. "No," Kelly growled. "No, everyone gets out alive. We don't leave teammates behind."
"He has his orders," John told Kelly.
"You've got to leave me," Sam said softly to Kelly. "And don't tell me you'll give me your suit. It took those techs on Damascus 15 minutes to fit us. I wouldn't even know where to start to unzip this thing."
John looked to the deck. The chief had told him he'd have to send men to their deaths. He didn't tell him it would feel like this.
"Don't waste time talking," Sam said. "Our new friends aren't going to wait for us while we figure this out."
He started the timers. "There, it's decided." A 3-minute countdown appeared in the corner of their heads-up displays.
"Now, get going, you two."
John clasped Sam's hand and squeezed it. Kelly hesitated, then saluted. John turned and grabbed her arm.
"Come on, Spartan, don't look back."
The truth was, it was John who didn't dare look back. If he had, he would have stayed with Sam. Better to die with a friend than leave him behind. But as much as he wanted to fight and die alongside his friend, he had to set an example for the rest of the Spartans and live to fight another day. John and Kelly pushed the pressure doors shut behind them. "Goodbye," he whispered. The countdown timer ticked the seconds off inexorably. 2:35. They ran down the corridor, popped the seal on the outer door. The atmosphere vented. 1:05. They climbed up through the twisted metal canyon that the Mac Round had torn through the hull. 33 seconds.
"There,"
John said, and pointed to the base of a charged pulse laser. They crawled toward it, waited as the glow built to a lethal charge. 12 seconds. They crouched and held on to one another. The laser fired. The heat blistered John's back. They pushed off with all their strength, multiplied through the Mjolnir armor. 0:00. The shield parted and they cleared the ship, hurtling into the blackness. The Covenant ship shuddered. Flashes of red appeared inside the hole. Then a gout of fire rose and ballooned, but curled downward as it hit and rebounded off their own shield. The plasma spread along the length of their vessel. The shield shimmered and rippled silver, holding the destructive force inside. Metal glowed and melted. The pulse laser turrets absorbed into the hull. The hull blistered, bubbled, and boiled. The shield finally gave. The ship exploded. Kelly clung to John. A thousand molten fragments hurtled past them, cooling from white to orange to red, and then disappearing into the dark of the night. Sam's death had shown them that the Covenant were not invincible. They could be beaten. At a high cost, however. John finally understood what the chief had meant. The difference between a life wasted and a life spent. John also knew that humanity had a fighting chance, and he was ready to go to war. Section 3. Sigma Octanus. Chapter 15. 0000 hours. July 17, 2542. Military calendar. UNSC Remote Scanning Outpost Archimedes. On the edge of the Sigma Octanus star system. Ensign William Lovell scratched his head, yawned, and sat down at his duty station. The wraparound view screen warmed to his presence.
"Good morning, Ensign Lovell," the computer said.
"Morning, sexy," he said.
It had been months since the ensign had seen a real woman. The cold female voice of the computer was the closest thing he was getting to a date.
"Voice print match," the computer confirmed. "Please enter password."
He typed, "There once was a girl." The ensign had never taken his duty too seriously. Maybe that's why he only made it through his second year at the academy. And maybe that's why he had been on Archimedes Station for the last year, stuck with third shift. But that suited him fine.
"Please re-enter password."
He typed more carefully this time. "There once was a girl." After first contact with the Covenant, he had almost been conscripted straight out of school. Instead, he had actually volunteered. Admiral Cole had defeated the Covenant at Harvest in 2531. His victory was publicized on every vid and hollow throughout the inner and outer colonies and all the way to Earth. That's why Lovell didn't try to dodge the enlistment officers. He had thought he'd watch a few battles from the bridge of a destroyer, fire a few missiles, rack up the victories, and be promoted to captain within a year. His excellent grades gave him instant admission to OCS on Luna. There was one small detail, however, the UNSC propaganda machine had left out of their broadcasts. Cole had won only because he outnumbered the Covenant 3-1, and even then, he had lost 2/3 of his fleet. Ensign Lovell had served on the UNSC frigate Gorgon for 4 years. He had been promoted to first lieutenant, then busted down to second lieutenant, and finally to ensign for insubordination and gross incompetence. The only reason they hadn't drummed him out of the service was that the UNSC needed every man and woman they could get their hands on. While on the Gorgon, he and the rest of Admiral Cole's fleet had sped along the outer colonies, chasing and being chased by the Covenant. After 4 years' space duty, Lovell had seen a dozen worlds glassed and billions murdered. He had simply broken under the strain. He closed his eyes and remembered. No, he hadn't broken. He was just scared of dying like everyone else.
"Please keep your eyes open," the computer told him. "Processing retinal scan."
He had drifted from office work to low-priority assignments and finally landed here a year ago. By that time, there were no more outer colonies. The Covenant had destroyed them all and were pressing inexorably inward, slowly taking the inner colonies. There had been a few isolated victories, but he knew it was only a matter of time before the aliens wiped the human race out of existence.
"Login complete," the computer announced.
Ensign Lovell's identity record was displayed on the monitor. In his academy picture, he looked 10 years younger, neatly trimmed jet-black hair, toothy grin, and sparkling green eyes. Today, his hair was unkempt, and the spark was long gone from his eyes.
"Please read General Order 09-8831A-1 before proceeding."
The ensign had memorized this stupid thing, but the computer would track his eye motions, make sure he read it anyway. He opened the file, and it popped on screen. "United Nations Space Command Emergency Priority Order 09-8831A-1. Encryption code, red.
public key, file, / first light. From UNSC Navcom, Fleet, H.T. Ward. 2. All UNSC personnel. Subject, General Order 0988318-1, the Cole Protocol. Classification, restricted, BGX Directive. The Cole Protocol. To safeguard the inner colonies and Earth, all UNSC vessels or stations must not be captured with intact navigation databases that may lead Covenant forces to human civilian population centers. If any Covenant forces are detected, 1. Activate selective purge of databases on all ship-based and planetary data networks. 2. Initiate triple screen check to ensure all data has been erased and all backups neutralized. 3. Execute viral data scavengers. Download from UNSC TTP/EPWW:COLE protocol/virtual-scav/FBR.091. 4. If retreating from Covenant forces, all ships must enter slipstream space with randomized vectors not directed toward Earth, the inner colonies, or any other human population center. 5. In case of imminent capture by Covenant forces, all UNSC ships must self-destruct. Violation of this directive will be considered an act of treason, and pursuant to UNSC Military Law Articles JAG 845-PAPA and JAG 7556-LIMA, such violations are punishable by life imprisonment or execution. End file. Press Enter if you understand these orders.
Ensign Lovell pressed Enter. The UNSC wasn't taking any chances, and after everything he had seen, he didn't blame them. His scanning windows appeared on the viewscreen, full of spectroscopic tracers and radar, and lots of noise. Archimedes Station cycled 3 probes into and out of slipstream space. Each probe sent out radar pings and analyzed the spectrum from radio to X-rays, then re-entered normal space and broadcast the data back to the station. The problem with slipstream space was that the laws of physics never worked the way they were supposed to. Exact positions, times, velocities, even masses were impossible to measure with any real accuracy. Ships never knew exactly where they were or exactly where they were going. Every time the probes returned from their 2-second journey, they could appear exactly where they had left, or 3 million kilometers distant. Sometimes they never returned at all. Drones had to be sent after the probes before the process could be repeated. Because of this slipperiness in the interdimensional space, UNSC ships traveling between star systems might arrive 500 million kilometers off course. The curious properties of slipspace also made this assignment a joke. Ensign Lovell was supposed to watch for pirates or black market runners trying to sneak by, and most importantly, for the Covenant. This station had never logged so much as a Covenant probe silhouette, and that was the reason he had specifically requested this dead-end assignment. It was safe. What he did see with regularity were trash dumps from UNSC vessels, clouds of primordial atomic hydrogen, even the occasional comet that had somehow plowed into the slipstream. Lovell yawned, kicked his feet up onto the control console, and closed his eyes. He nearly fell out of his chair when the comm board contact alert pinged. "Oh, no," he whispered, fear and shame at his own cowardice forming a cold lump in his belly. "Don't let it be the Covenant. Don't let it not here." He quickly activated the controls and traced the contact signal back to the source, Alpha Probe. The probe had detected an incoming mass, a slight arc to its trajectory pulled by the gravity of Sigma Octanus. It was large. A cloud of dust, perhaps? If it was, it would soon distort and scatter. Ensign Lovell sat up straighter in his chair. Beta Probe cycled back. The mass was still there, and as solid as before. It was the largest reading Ensign Lovell had ever seen. 20,000 tons. That couldn't be a Covenant ship. They didn't get that big. And the silhouette was a bumpy, spherical shape. It didn't match any of the Covenant ships in the database. It had to be a rogue asteroid. He tapped his stylus on the desk. What if it wasn't an asteroid? He'd have to purge the database and enable the self-destruct mechanism for the outpost. But what could the Covenant want way out here? Gamma probe reappeared. The mass readings were unchanged. Spectroscopic analysis was inconclusive, which was normal for probe reading at this distance. The mass was 2 hours out at its present velocity. Its projected trajectory was hyperbolic, a quick swing near the star, and then it would pass invisibly out of the system and be forever gone. He noted that its trajectory brought it close to Sigma Octanus IV, which, if the rock were in real space, would be cause for alarm. In slip space, however, it could pass through the planet, and no one would notice. Ensign Lovell relaxed and sent the retrieval drones after the three probes. By the time they got the probes back, though, the mass would be long gone. He stared at the last image on screen. Was it worth sending an immediate report to Sigma Octanus Com? They'd make him send his probes out without a proper recovery, and the probes would likely get lost after that. A supply ship would have to be sent out here to replace them. The station would have to be in space.